And fucking livid that we are stuck in the timeline where Alex Jones is right.
Oh no! Okay, no.
Why aren't the Amish afraid of COVID? Because they don't have TVs.
As I said, democracy is a system that reinforces authoritarian ideals.
Hope I don't get canceled. Talk to Steve.
Being a victim of a tragedy doesn't make you an expert in public policy.
Well, I mean, AOC is a drama queen and she's full of shit.
Remember, they lost the Afghan war 10 years ago.
You brought a freaking guillotine.
They said, you don't get to tell us no. We're the state health department. And I said, hell no.
It wasn't making Christianity better. It was making rock worse.
What the fuck do you have on your face, Olivia?
You want to make the world a better place? Have some babies and raise them to not be stupid.
I remember thinking, man, governments are not going to like this shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, activists, and people of the internet, thank you for tuning into another episode of O'Donnell for Liberty after taking last week off. As always, I'm your host, Justin. Before we get started, just remember, whatever platform you listen on, whether YouTube Live, Odyssey, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or on LRN.fm, you can help grow the show by liking, commenting, subscribing, and sharing with your friends. If you enjoy the content, you can join our production team by visiting patreon.com/O'Donnell for Liberty. Again, that's patreon.com/O'Donnell. The number four, Liberty. And make sure to check out snackswag.com for all your favorite Liberty merch, including some brand new designs for our t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, coffee mugs, tote bags, and more. Again, that's snackswag.com, and you can check out the awesome new collection of Ungovernable Swag today. If you want to keep in touch between shows, follow me on social media and join our community Discord channel where you can chat with other fans of the show at any time. All these links can be found in the description of the video or podcast you're listening to, as well as on O'Donnell4Liberty.com. So check that description for the link and make sure you give it a visit today. Now, 2022 is right around the corner, and it's a special time of year when activists have to ask themselves whether or not they're going to do that crazy thing and run for office yet again. For libertarians, it's an especially difficult decision because so many are so used to doing it with no support, no team, no infrastructure, no funding, and running at a wall just to see what's going to happen. Tonight's guest is breaking that mold. He's showing that a libertarian campaign can be as professional as we feel the need to make it. And he's doing it in the most unlikely of places. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome the libertarian running for governor of New York, Mr. Larry Sharp. Larry, how are you tonight?
I am, I gotta do something good. You gave me a good intro, so I bet it's something professional. Gotta change my hoodie. I gotta put a shirt on. What I'm messing up.
So you're running for governor of New York again.
Yes, the second time in a row. The question is, am I stupid? Am I crazy? Am I stubborn? Or some combination of all three?
I mean, you're a libertarian, so there is a little bit of everything in there.
It's true. Good point. Point taken. Yes, probably all three. Probably all three. Yes.
So what possessed you to do it the first time?
The first time I did it because I was angry, to be fair with you. I literally was, as most New Yorkers were considering, leaving New York. It's a common thing. We're all thinking about leaving. In fact, yet again, by the way, we won again. I think it's third year in a row. We are the number one state when it comes to losing population. So take that, California. So yes, we actually are number one yet again. In losing, I think 300 and some odd thousand officially this year.
You just lost a congressional seat, didn't you?
We lost one, and if we had gone 3 months later, we would have lost two. That's how bad we were. Yes, we are losing. In the last 11 years, we've lost 2 million people.
Well, I hate to say it, but as a Granite
Stater, I was mad.
As a Granite Stater in New Hampshire, I am happy to see New York losing congressional seats.
Well, you know, in theory, people say that, but here's the problem. There are two problems with that. As more people leave New York, they go to your state, right? Or whatever state they go to. Right. As the people who leave New York, the people who leave New York are those who are fed up with the way that New York is being run. So who's left? Those either who don't care or those who are great with the way New York's being run, which means it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And you might go, well, why do I care? I live in New Hampshire. I live in Florida. I live wherever. I don't care what happens in New York. You should, because it's coming to you. New York State is the battleground state. This is where the stuff's actually happening. We are the ones who are implementing all of the horrible things worse than California. And if we get away with it, it's coming to your state. Now, if you live in New York, New Jersey, it's coming like next year. If you live in Utah, it's coming in like 25 years. But it's still coming to you either way. Just depends on what state you live in. But it's coming to you. So you should care about New York, even if you don't live here. Now, why am I here? Why am I running? I thought of leaving in 2016, 2017. I was going to go to North Carolina. And for what I do for a living, I am a consultant for businesses for a living. So I need a big city to do, you know, what I do to make a living. So I thought about moving to Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a big city, lots of large companies there. I figured I could move there. So I went there. And as I was there, I realized I could sell my shoebox of a house in New York City and buy a mansion in North Carolina and still have money to spare and pay less taxes. So people thought, hey, you could go there. And I thought, no, why should I leave? I got angry. Why should I leave my state that I love, where I'm born, where I'm raised, where my family is, where my friends are? Why should I have to leave my state? Why does my state suck so bad? So I thought, you know what? I'm going to fix it. And I'm going to run for governor and fix it all. That plan did not work out as I hoped. But that was my plan. So I was unable to fix New York. And then I thought, you know what? I may try again. Let me stay. Let me try to see if I can make some impact. I learned a lot in my first race. We made a lot of mistakes, but even with all of our mistakes, and we made lots of them, me too, lots of them. And even with all of that, I did several things. One, I never fired anybody for incompetence. Even when people made mistakes, I never fired them, because we have to learn and grow and build infrastructure out to be used for other teams. So when we made a mistake and people said, that person should be fired, I said, no, I'm not firing them. They're learning, because you're going to need them in 2 years, because the mistakes they make in my campaign, you're going to want them for yours. So keep your mouth shut, let them make mistakes. I take responsibility and we'll keep moving. So I did that. But the second thing I did is we raised $500,000. I don't think there's any campaign that's raised more than that except for a presidential campaign. I mean, maybe, but I don't think so. I think this was the biggest non-presidential libertarian campaign ever, is what I believe. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. I also ran it for over a year. So it was the longest campaign ever run. And we had a huge team, a lot of people on the team. So we got 100,000 votes. Actually, we got more, but doesn't really matter. We got ballot access for the state. And then the most important piece, a year later, what I've been saying, there's been a battle in libertarian world that says we should only run top of the ticket, or we should only run bottom of the ticket, or whatever. I think that's wrong. We should do both. But here's how. Top of the ticket has the best chance of press, but the least chance of victory. The bottom of the ticket has the least chance of press, but the most chance of victory. So top of the ticket should run in 2022 and 2024, and then help the bottom of the ticket run in 2023 and 2025, so that those people can now begin to grow with the press, which is what I did. In 2018, after I lost, I then crossed the state again, supporting local candidates, and we actually had 103 victories in New York State in 2019. We are from zero libertarians when I first started running to 103. And then New York State said, well, no, you can't do that. And then removed ballot access, and we were all gone. So now I'm going again. But now I want to break a hole so big that they can't close it. If I can do that, then finally maybe we can have some change.
So that debate's ongoing. And that debate really does rage through the Libertarian Party and Liberty politics. And see, there's even a bigger debate about whether or not to run as a Libertarian or run as a Republican or even run as a Democrat. Like, what's more important, having the party win or having your principles represented in office, is a question a lot of people
general
ask.
Rule. I mean, there are some exceptions, obviously. But general rule, you want to run third party. You want to run Libertarian. And the reason is, in the long run, I remember someone asked me a question once, you know, what if voting for some libertarian who, you know, can't win, for president. And if you run, then all of a sudden, maybe we don't, we get a bad president or a bad senator or something. So why would you do that? You want to stop the bad guy from winning. And my argument is, it doesn't matter. And here's the reason why. And I always want people to remember this. Bush got us Obama. Obama got us Trump. Trump got us Biden. So whatever side you're on, you're unhappy. It doesn't matter. So, well, we stopped Hillary Clinton. Awesome. Then 4 years later, you got Biden. Or boy, we stopped Trump. Awesome. 4 years later, you're going to get him back or somebody else. It doesn't matter, right? So you're just wasting time. And worse, you're making everything worse as we fight each other. So I would rather throw that vote away on some libertarian. But here's my example. I got my butt kicked in 2018. I only got 2% of the vote. But imagine if people had actually realized the value of my run, which is if you had actually given me 15 or 20% of the vote, people would have been paying attention to me. So they have to listen to me. All of my policies to fix New York have been on my website for 4 years. No one's picked them up. Why? Nobody cares. Why should they? Democrats always win in my state. It's gerrymandered to win. Who cares? The Republican's never going to win. The Republican hasn't won a statewide election in my state in 20 years. And that's not going to change, right? The state's getting bluer, not redder. New York City, 6-1, Democrats, Republican registered. In the state, 2.5-1, almost 3-1, registered Democrat to Republican. You vote for a Republican or Democrat in a statewide election, that's throwing your vote away. Useless. Means nothing. So instead, vote for the third party so that they can grow enough to where now we have impact. And here is my next piece I'll bring up. Why you should run Democrat, Republican. Great. How are you going to change gerrymandering? You're not. You only change with a third party. How are you going to actually break a tie in the Senate? You're not. Third party. How are you going to break a tie in my state Senate? You're not. Third party. Third party is the only way of actually making long-term change. Can you say, you know, short-term you should do so? Maybe. Long-term, no way.
Well, people are going to point to the Free State Project and the success we've had here in New Hampshire. I do think it's a little bit different where it's not, instead of having one libertarian in a legislature of 400 people, we have 85 libertarians who are registered Republican and create a big enough block that they can swing votes any way they want.
Well, that's why I said it's a general rule. There's always exceptions, yes. Right? It's a general rule. What I said is a general rule. Without question, there are exceptions.
And I think there's exceptions to that, the whole whether or not you should run top ticket or bottom ticket, too.
Yeah, agree too.
Like every state's different. And I think one of the biggest problems libertarians face is libertarians look at the Libertarian Party as kind of a monolith and think that everything should be done the same, that there's one playbook, without realizing that all politics are local to them. And that what works for you in New York isn't going to work for me in New Hampshire. It's not going to work for somebody out in California.
Absolutely. They're
three completely different countries, culturally, politically, even geographically.
100%.
And to think that we should all be running everything identically is insane.
Which is why you heard me say a general rule. It is not a hard rule. Each state has a different rule. I agree. I have fusion voting in my state. I can run in 4 or 5 parties if I want to.
See, to me, that seems like above and beyond just running third party. If you were able to run and collect as many tickets as possible.
That's my plan.
Like, that goes out of its way to show people that the party structure itself is the problem. Because you're going to get blind, loyal voters who aren't going to have a clue who you are 100%. Just because you have a letter next to your name.
Correct. Yes. I saw that consistently. I knew... The last time in 2018, over half the Republicans actually didn't know who was running. Didn't know.
And this isn't a problem that's unique to Republicans and Democrats either. Libertarians have this same problem with low information primary voters. In 2018, when I ran for Congress, the reason I ran is because people in leadership in the LPNH were begging for somebody to run to primary. Somebody who had declared they were going to run and take advantage of ballot access, Tom Alciere. Who, if you want it, the best way to describe Tom Alciere, I think, is you take debilitating libertarian autism and put it in a package that likes to scream at people about how anyone who thinks about violating their rights should be executed on the statehouse steps.
Wow. Okay. So he's a calm, reasonable guy.
Yeah. And so They were begging for somebody to primary him. So I ran against him and I got 80% of the vote. And when we looked at the breakdown afterwards, he didn't get a single vote in a single town where he wasn't listed first on the ballot. So even Libertarian Party primary voters had some low information voters who just went in and checked the top box.
Well, this is my point, right? I think that what we often fail at, and the other two parties don't have to even worry about it, is we often fail at inspiring someone to give a damn, right? We need to have someone have a reason to care. If you're a Democrat or Republican, you don't. In fact, you can just be a complete airhead and just yell other guy bad. If you're a Democrat, you can just yell, those Republicans are all racist, and you'll get elected. If you're a Republican, just wear Democrats are all socialists, and you'll get elected. That's all that matters. You can be a total airhead, doesn't matter, and that's what motivates you. You fight on culture war, and you win. But when you are any third party, libertarian, obviously, I'm clearly biased. But if you're if you're running libertarian, that's not enough to motivate people, because if you if they want to just yell at people, the left and right does it better than we do, right? So we have to be able to give them a reason to care. And very often that is single issue voters. And the problem with many libertarians is if someone only agrees with us on one thing, we get mad at them, and we shouldn't. We should be like, okay, you hate the war on drugs. Good. You still want like Medicare for all and stuff, and you like bombing people. Let's not talk about that now. Let's just talk about the war on drugs thing, and let's get you to vote for me because I'll end up a war on drugs. No, I'm not going to bomb brown people. And no, I'm not doing all, I'm not getting rid of guns. I'm not doing that. But I will absolutely help end the war on drugs. So stay with me on that one, and you care, and we'll move forward. So sometimes when it comes to getting people to vote for you, and there's a difference between getting people to vote for you and getting people to join the party.
Now, on something you said there, the libertarians struggle to inspire people. I had a revelation the other night. On the another show I host, a Free State Project show every Monday night that I host, we had a guest on this week. I want to play you a short 30-second clip of something she said and get your feedback on it.
Sometimes we get wrapped up on what we don't want. There's a lot of protesting and frustration about things that we see going wrong. And so I hope that people look at We Heart West and they see that, okay, maybe we can put a lot of energy towards something that we do want. You know, we can live our values and our principles. We can act in a way that, you know, does something to help others without being forced to do that. And I think that that's probably the most important thing that we can do as libertarians.
Yeah, it's a nice idea. But it's a whole lot harder than what she just said. She's correct, but man, is it hard, because it's way easier to just go, vote for me because Justin will kill your children.
Right.
That's way easier than saying, hold on, let me show you a way to inspire you to make your children great. Now, can you do it? Yeah, but you can't do it by saying things like principles and constitution, and that doesn't work, and freedom. That does not inspire the non-libertarian. Libertarians love that. We eat that up. That's red meat for us. But non-libertarians, it means nothing.
I just find it, I didn't even think about it. It's something I'd never actually thought about when putting together campaigns and pitches until she'd said that to us the other night. And because she runs a community service organization, they're not involved in politics at all. They're just libertarians who are out doing community service and helping clean up their town and fix their community on the street in their community with their non-libertarian neighbors. And they're seeing more success than the politicians are in converting people and growing their movement. And to what she's saying, it is very, very difficult to campaign on what we love and positive things when we're watching the world fall apart and everything in politics is something that we hate.
It's why I ignore all the national politics. It's why I ignore it. You don't see me comment on any of that stuff. You don't see me comment on that. Why bother? It's useless. Instead, I do things like say, if you like your dealer, you can keep your dealer. Right? That's motivating. Regulate like onions. Yeah. Those things are what she's talking about, right? The key to doing this right. Now, I didn't always do it right at all. I made a lot of errors, but I knew what the goal was. The goal is to have a policy or idea that is radical enough to be noticed, but familiar enough to be accepted. And man, that is hard to do. And I didn't do it right every time. But one of my favorite ones was regulate like onions. Regulate, right, is a word that people are familiar with. They like that. Ooh, regulation. We like that. That's safety. That's what the average non-libertarian hears. Libertarians hear that and want to just jump out of their skin. But non-libertarians like that word. And then I say like a plant or like onions or like carrots. And they go, huh, that's the radical part. So it's familiar enough and also radical enough. And getting that, that's a very hard line to balance. But you got to keep trying until you get it right.
One of the only things from 2016 that stuck around with me as a positive from all past judging the Johnson Wealth campaign in hindsight, it was from Gary's stump speech, every single stop, Uber everything.
Yes. Oh, perfect. Yes. Yes. Yes.
That was the only thing that stuck out to me that I remembered is like, this is incredible. That's a good line.
Yes.
Everyone knows Uber.
Familiar enough, but radical enough.
And I just remember at the Boston event, Gary's, he takes his like tactical pause in the middle of his like Uber doctor, and somebody at breaking the silence just screams Uber president, and everyone lost their mind.
Yes.
But yes. Hey, that'd be great. Oh, I don't think we could Uber the president, unfortunately.
Well, maybe one day.
But maybe we can Uber a governor of New York.
Maybe. We'll try it. Whatever. If we can fix New York, I'm in. Yes. I'm totally in. Let's do it.
Now, say you do get elected. Say you get lightning and body. You get all of these party lines that matter in just enough ill-informed and uninformed voters to put you over the top, and you get elected governor of New York.
Yep.
What then?
Literally, the entire nation changes overnight. And I'm not exact. There's no hyperbole in that. The entire nation changes overnight. Because if I actually win this thing, and I'm going to run to absolutely win this thing, you know I will, and I hope lightning strikes and I win it. But if I do win this thing, immediately you're going to find people who wanted to be libertarian, who would never do it, become libertarian.
Well, we've They're seen third-party candidates win high-profile races before.
They've never had a party behind them. Never. Never happened. They've never had a party behind them. We have an actual party and infrastructure behind us. No other candidate has. They've done it only on personality. And personality matters. I mean, this is a popularity contest. Elections are literally popularity contests. So it matters.
At some point in the future, I'm going to need you to explain to me how Lincoln Chafee's personality got him elected. But that's the time in the future. Because other than a couple funny stories I've heard him tell, I can't understand how he kept getting elected in Rhode Island.
Well, there's also luck involved too. So let me just grab both of those things. So in any case, so if I get elected, now we have an actual party infrastructure. There's something that other people can join, and you will find people do so. You will find, you know, the liberty leaning people that were never going to join. Some will go, holy crap, this will work. They'll join. Because if Larry Sharp wins this thing, that means he's raised several million dollars. That means he's built out a team across the entire country. That means he's done all the things that have happened. He's gone on TV. He's gone on radio. He's bought ads. He's been in polling. That means that he has done all the things required, right? If I do that, I've done all those things. And if I do all those things, they will realize, wait a minute, there's an infrastructure and a pathway to success being a libertarian. And that is what's holding back many talented people from being libertarian. So literally that will change overnight. The next thing will happen when that happens is gerrymandering will change overnight, because gerrymandering only works when there's two parties. Once there's three, that begins to fail. So as that begins to collapse, gerrymandering begins to collapse. So now people don't just run unopposed all the time. They'll be running and having to actually have policies and issues and actually talk to their own people. That will begin to change. Fundraising will begin to change. All this stuff will change overnight. And not just that, there'll actually be somebody who will not always have a policy that only has four answers. And by the way, government does four things well. And that's why every policy and every answer to any problem is always one of four things. One, kill people. Very good at that. You wanna mass murder people, particularly if it's like indiscriminate? Really good at that. So kill people is one. Number two, imprison people. Again, particularly indiscriminately, particularly the poor, great at that, imprisoning people. Three, creating unnecessary bureaucracy. Oh my God. If you ever think I am too efficient, can I please be less efficient? Government got you covered. Absolutely. And four, write checks. Government writes checks better than banks. Those are the four things government does well. Note, every single answer in air quotes that government comes up with always has one, two, three, or four of those. And that's all they ever do. But all of my policies have none of those. So all of a sudden, you'll have actual policies that don't have those four. And they'll see success in that. It will change how we govern. It will change how people think about government. There'll be a libertarian governor and the zombie apocalypse didn't happen, which is what they all thought was going to happen. And it doesn't. So once that begins to happen, the entire country will begin to change. That will be the beginning of the change. Do I think I'm the guy to save the country? I do not. Do I think I can be the guy who begins it, who sets it up to be saved? I do. I can be that guy. I can be the guy who sets it up to be saved. I can be that guy. And I'm hoping that I am going to be that guy.
So of everything you're running on, what is your favorite policy in your platform that you think reaches the most people and is the most libertarian?
There are several of them. Oh my God, so many of them. Probably my most popular one is naming rights for infrastructure to pay for infrastructure. That's probably my most popular one, right? So people talk about the Pepsi Bridge, the Verizon Bridge, whatever.
The Domino's Expressway.
There we go. Yes, whatever. 100%. Let's do it. I'm in. Let's do it. So raising money, because what it does is it lowers taxes, which is what Republicans like, but it also gets businesses to pay more, which Democrats like. So Democrats always say, we want businesses to pay more. Okay, we'll get them to pay more, just voluntarily. I'm happy. Let's let them pay more. I think you're right. I think Pfizer and McDonald's and Pepsi should, the Pfizer toy, exactly, should all pay more. You're right. Yep. But let's not tax them. Let's not force them. Let's show them a valuable way for them to pay more. And they will. If you try to tax the rich or tax the big businesses, how can you when they write all the laws? Not going to work. But when you said you give them a reason to do it, they'll pay for it. And that, so everybody wins. That's probably my most popular and it's probably most libertarian. However, it isn't total because it's not privatization. And many libertarians actually want privatization. I know New York is not going to go there. Your state might go there. I don't know. My state's not going there. If I go privatization, bridge too far. Not going to happen. Good pun. So what I mean is I want to go to leasing naming rights. And that is a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, it's a great step in the right direction. And I don't think people fully grasp just how far a private business will go for something that they think is a good marketing opportunity.
Yep.
I remember about 10, 12 years ago, back when I used to live in Boston, we got hit by a major blizzard, buried the city. It was worse than the blizzard of 78. It was the most snowfall in the shortest period of time ever recorded in the state. On Cape Cod, they got 8 feet of snow in some places, wow, and it froze overnight. And so it was a pain in the ass to get out. And overnight, just appeared out of nowhere, an army of plow trucks just descended on the city of Boston. And they weren't just plowing. They were plowing out private driveways and private parking spots, getting out and shoveling stoops up to the townhouses and leaving a door hanger on every door that says, "You've been plowed by Pornhub."
There we go. Yes.
And I don't know how much Pornhub spent on that, but it was profitable enough on the return for them to then open a adult store in Boston for 2 years,
yep,
and send the plow trucks back for 2 more years.
Yep. Absolutely. And that's my point. Most people who run for office have never been in business. I've been in business for 20 years. I'm a consultant in business. I've been in an office in a public company twice. I know exactly how people spend money. I've been the guy saying how much money to spend. I've been the guy deciding, of course, right? There's an old saying in advertising, 50% of my marketing doesn't work. I don't know which 50%. So that's an old joke. Yes.
Yeah. Andrew asks, can we get public naming rights on laws like the Goldman Sachs Build Back Better plan?
I wish we had, at least it'd be transparent because they're writing the law anyway. So maybe it'll be transparent at least.
I did see Andrew had put out on Twitter earlier today. I saw one of the better digs I've seen is like the very fact that Goldman Sachs is endorsing the Build Back Better plan should tell you it's a bad idea.
The Goldman Sachs was actually considering leaving New York and moving to I think Florida.
Doesn't Florida have no business profits tax?
Correct.
What an incentive. I'm honestly shocked that New York has retained as much of the business market and it has remained in the center.
No. It doesn't. It is already leaving. It's been leaving. COVID destroyed it more than anything, right? In 2020, when my lord and master, King Andrew Cuomo II, oh, hail the old king, when he deemed me non-essential, all my consulting and training work literally went away overnight, just gone. So I had to become a business coach. There was nothing else I could do. So I had to shift my business model into heavy coaching. I'd already done coaching in the past, but I was just doing a whole lot of it now. And as I did that, most of my clients were relatively wealthy people who were either in finance or law or tech. That's the people who can afford coaching. So generally speaking, it was in that world. Most of them left. If you're wealthy in New York City, you have two homes. You have one in New York City and then one someplace else. Jersey Shore, Florida, Aspen. You have a second home someplace if you're wealthy.
New Hampshire,
yes. Some upstate New York, it depends. But you have another home someplace else if you're wealthy in New York City. They all went to those secondary homes. They've been making money in those secondary homes for about a year and a half now. They don't want to come back. They're not coming back. That great resignation is not just in people in the service industry. That's also people in high finance, high tech, high law. They're like, I'm not coming back, man. Sorry. So you either got to pay me to stay where I am, or I'm not coming back. It's just, I'll quit then. And that's happening a lot right now. So New York is losing a lot. New York City is so broken. It hasn't figured out. You know, 20 years ago, tech followed finance, right? Because tech needed the money. So tech would go where finance was to get the money. Those days are long gone. Now finance follows tech. Tech leads the way. Finance doesn't. So now finance follows tech. So now as we, as idiotic New York State government decides to punish all our businesses and to get rid of all the punish Bitcoin and all the cryptocurrencies and all the dumb stuff that we do, punish cannabis, everything new, we just punish. So as we do that, even the banks are leaving. People don't know this. On Wall Street, there's only one bank on Wall Street. It's only Deutsche Bank because they own the building. Every other bank is gone. They're not on Wall Street anymore. You can live on Wall Street. It's residential apartments now.
One of my favorite examples of that sticks out is someone who's very involved in the cryptocurrency world and tech and development for cryptocurrency. When Ripple, the company, first started, they started in New York. Mm-hmm. And the person they hired as their first CEO was the former chairman of the New York Board of Financial Services.
Losky.
Yeah, who created the BitLicense, who tried to regulate crypto. And as CEO of Ripple, he moved them out of New York because they couldn't figure out how to comply with the regulation he created.
That's correct. Yes. Talk about corruption. I mean, New York State does corruption awesome. Losky, actually, he ran our finance department, created this maze, then left and became a consultant for that maze. And that was totally legal and fine. And now if you want to be get a bit licensed in New York State, you got to pay him six figures to do it. Brilliant. Brilliant.
Why about it? Sooner, I think sooner rather than later, if things keep trending the way they're trending, it's not going to be worth the return on investment to do that.
Correct.
Just not do business in New York.
Correct. And New York doesn't care.
Yeah. Like, why?
The
like
establishment Florida is fine. It's in charge. It's solid. It doesn't matter. People say, well, aren't the New York, you know, aren't the New York leadership, aren't they upset that people are leaving? Why? They're solidly in power.
The only people leaving are the people that threaten their power.
That is correct. Yes. The people who are leaving are those who don't like them. They're happy. My former Governor Cuomo said this out loud years ago. He said, New York State, if you're conservative, there's no room for you here. He said that. He didn't care. Leave. He's like, good.
If I say the opposite in New Hampshire, I'm called a racist. But yeah, I got in trouble. In trouble on Twitter for just responding to a New Hampshire state representative because she just kept going on and on and on about how awful libertarians are and how libertarians are destroying New Hampshire. And I just kept responding with the picture of the Massachusetts highway sign that says Massachusetts welcomes you. And they gave me a 12-hour suspension for targeted harassment.
Ah, see that? There we go. See that? You're a bad guy, Justin. You're a bad guy. That's it.
Hey, no, but to your point, you're trying to stop people from leaving. And a lot of what I'm doing is trying to get people to leave New York. But we're still on the same team, the same side. It's just all the people that are leaving, I want to come help me make New Hampshire better. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're working on with the Free State Project. At the same time, you're looking at like legislative success we've had in the Free State Project and hoping libertarians can replicate that elsewhere. But it's real uphill battle. And how do you plan to preserve your principles, maintain a libertarian core of your messaging while trying to reach normals and non-libertarians to vote for you? Because I feel like myself, Dr. Jason Sorens, the founders of the Free State Project and the people that work with the Free State Project have come to the realization there just simply are not enough libertarians for us to win elections outright on libertarian policy.
I think you are correct in all those things. And let me explain the reality and why I do what I do. One, New York State is a battleground state, as I said. Someone's got to be in the front line. I'm in the front line. I'm a Marine. I'll stay in the front line. I don't mind. Literally, AOC is my congressperson. That's where I live. So you understand. Yes, I accept your condolences. So that's literally where I live. I'm in the front. I'm on the front lines. Someone has to be. You might want to build whatever you want, but here's what I can promise you. If you don't want to turn or convert or get others to see libertarians as real or to become libertarians, they are going to vote all of your rights away. Well, Larry, I have a gun. They have more of them. Larry, I have friends. They have more friends. Larry, I have principles. You'll have your principles in prison, I guess, or when you're shot against the wall. That's all I can tell you. Lots of people have principles. Lots of them have guns. They have more guns, and they have more laws and more people in uniform, and all your principles and all your guns will put you still in jail or against the wall. I'd rather you not be shot against the wall. I'd rather you not be put in prison. I'd rather you not have to leave your country. I'd like us to not have to pack up and leave America as it turns to a fascist state. I'd like it to not happen. Someone's got to start the ball rolling somewhere. I hope it's me. And if I start that ball rolling well enough, your job will be easier, Justin, because in my view, if I can turn New York and just get enough people to not become libertarian, but just to vote libertarian for one election, see that the zombie apocalypse doesn't happen, then when you're in New Hampshire, you're a whole lot freer than my state is. So if I can turn my state, your whole state can become libertarian overnight. And even if they don't become libertarian, they can just vote for libertarians and see us as viable and real. If we don't do that, in the long run, we lose or we have to leave our country. I don't want either of those things to happen. So someone has to do it. I'm saying it's me.
I'm just worried because I'm worried and ecstatic and optimistic and pessimistic all at the same time. It's a really big conflict because I am seeing people leaving New York every single day.
100%.
And as somebody on front facing for the Free State Project and dealing with new movers as they show up and helping them get integrated and helping run one of the social clubs, on Facebook, we have a comment from Mike Rohan, who just moved here from New York this past summer.
Yeah.
A lot of people are showing up, not even knowing what the Free State Project is. They just see, no, not New York.
Correct.
Meet a bunch of libertarians at an event. It's like, oh, what's this? And it's like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely one of you guys. It's like they're finding their own way away. And it's not just to New Hampshire. It's to Florida. It's 100%. To Texas. Joe Rogan started a big trend when Joe Rogan, after he signed his $100 million deal with Spotify, before he got paid, up and moved to Texas because the difference in taxes alone paid for his whole house and property in Texas.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. More and more doing it. I agree. Don't get me wrong. I'm like every other New Yorker. I was considering moving too. I always think about moving. I'm still thinking about going to Tennessee.
Trump moved to Florida.
Donald Trump left. Yes, I agree. Yes. But look, to be very full with you, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe you're right and there's just no chance. It's possible. But I started in 2016 with a 10-year plan. Mm-hmm. I'm 5 years in. I've got 5 years left. And my plan in 10 years was by 2026 for Libertarian Party to have some federal representation. That was my goal. I still have that goal in mind. And everything I'm doing is moving towards that, is for us to have some federal representation in 2026, at the end of that election cycle. If we have something, that's my ray of hope.
I remember the first time I heard you pitch your 10-year plan. It was at a convention in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Yes, that's correct. Yes. And I'm still on it. I haven't stopped. I understand what a campaign is. And I am campaigning. And I'm island hopping. And I keep moving. And we had some setbacks. 2020, what I wanted in 2020 was one electoral vote in the election. And we got none. I'm very disappointed in that. 2024, we have to have some electoral votes in that. We have to have gold on that map. They show that map 80 bazillion times at the end of the presidential election. We have to have some gold on that map. People go, what's that gold? Oh my God, that's libertarians. They're real. We get gold on that map, you can guarantee it will help every single libertarian running across the state, locally or in a state, anywhere they are, because now we're valid in the eyes of the average voter. And that's what I want. I want us to be valid in the eyes of the average voter, and gold on that map is the right marketing tool to make that happen. And I'm trying to move towards that. But to be forward, say I'm totally wrong. And I get my butt kicked next year. We get our butt kicked again in 2024. We get our butt kicked in 2026. Here's one thing I'll be sure of, Justin. I did my bit. And when I'm packing up and moving to Alaska or whatever, or coming to hang out with you in New Hampshire, whatever I'm doing, I'll know that I did my bit. I did the best I could. And I tried to save it for my family. I couldn't do mine. I guess someone else will do it because it's not me.
All right. All other things aside, other than your own campaign, what other candidate that you're aware of is running are you most excited to see run?
Harrington. Ricky Harrington Jr.
And he's running again, too. Not his first rodeo.
Absolutely. He did Senate, and now he's doing governor.
Okay. And what are your predictions there?
I don't have any. I don't know the race well enough. I just know he's going to do well because he's more and more known. He is my other shining star that I see right now. I mean, I'm sure there are others, too. Up in here in New York, Thomas Queter. Thomas Queter has run twice already. I mean, once already. It's his second time run also. He's here locally in New York. So, yeah, he's upstate 52, state senate.
I just gave his campaign some free consulting to help him get set up with cryptocurrency, too. So 100%. Go check him out.
Another great one here in New York. So, yeah, we've got a couple of them, right, here or there. But to be forward, when I wasn't running, I haven't run in 3 years. And when I don't run, I support others. You see me do all the time. I help people raise money. I help other candidates. I'm going out of my way. Now I'm running. So now this time is going to be about me for about a year. And then I go back to other candidates again.
Well, I am excited to see you run again. And hopefully we can learn from our mistakes in the past and learn from last time around.
Well, we're going to raise a lot of money now too, which is good. I mean, I'm on target. I hope to raise, I'm definitely gonna be raising over six figures by January. My January report will come out in 2 weeks.
I know. And I got to say, it's been a breath of fresh air to get harassed by your team with weekly phone calls asking for a check, which no other libertarian candidate's ever done to me before. Correct. And I keep telling them, I've got it on the calendar for January, but I admire the hustle.
Yes, because we need to get everything in by December 31st for the first report. So yes, I am. I'm on the phone 4 hours a day.
We always.
I also get shadow banned. By the way, I get shadow banned like tomorrow on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. So I can't raise money as I used to do it as well online. I have to spend much more of my time doing events and phone work now.
Well, that just means you're spending more time doing the traditional campaign stuff.
Yeah, correct. Well, literally, I stop working. Right when I run, I don't work. In my opinion, if you do a statewide run, you should not have a job. Now, I can't force anyone to do that, and people do what they want. My opinion, if you're doing a statewide campaign, you can't have a job. And I did not work the first time I ran, and I took a bath, and I'll take a bath again now, and it'll suck. It'll suck. When I was done running, I was six figures in debt at the end of my run. Because I didn't take a salary for a year. I live in New York City. I have a wife and two kids. My wife does not work. You can imagine my bills. And so I did not work for a year. And so I was six figures in debt. I'll be six figures in debt again after this one too. I'll have to work my way out of it. That's why people said, Larry, why didn't you run in 2020? Because I was broke. That's why I didn't run in 2020. I got to work to do this.
That is not a position I would envy being in, especially after such a thankless and miserable task of running for office. As someone who's done it twice, as the signs on behind me suggest, it's not something I ever want to go do again. And my second campaign was a world better and different than my first. We always learn from our mistakes.
Yes.
But one of the most important things that I think libertarians fail to do that other parties do so especially well is learn from other people's mistakes. So for those who are watching who might be thinking about running for state senate or something local race for them, while every race is different and what you're doing for your campaign might not apply directly, there's still some things that are very important across any campaign. What are some things that you did wrong last time that you're doing different this time?
Out of habit, because of who I am and what I do, I ran my campaign like a business, and that's a mistake. You should never run your campaign. A campaign is not a business. It's a passion project. Two totally separate things. And I didn't understand that. And I made errors because of that. I have to realize that the candidate is the center of purpose and is the center of passion and has to be involved in everything and make sure that they're doing the things and being part of everything. And I didn't do that well in the beginning of my campaign. At the end, I did. Finding a good campaign manager is very tough, difficult, too. You want to find the right team to where, in the perfect world, the candidate does only two things. And this is perfect world, obviously.
Yep.
Two things. One is show up, and the second is communicate. If the candidate is showing up and communicating, that's the perfect world. Now, clearly you can't only do that, but that's what you want to get as close to as possible. You want to find people around you who can make sure they're pushing you where to go, telling you where to be, making sure the trains run on time, and you're not running your own campaign. So you got to make sure you're doing that. A third thing I got is I didn't realize how much money mattered. I knew money mattered. I didn't realize how much. Oh my God, I did not know how much it mattered. If you want to get covered in the press, you have to buy ads. So you've got to raise money to buy ads so you can be covered in the press. You want to be in the polls, you got to buy polls. You buy a poll, you get in a poll. Then they start covering you in the polls. So you have to spend money. Polls for the big companies cost 40, 50 grand. Any advertising campaign in New York State, small ones, going to cost you 10 grand. So you have to raise money faster, earlier, and more. That was something else that I learned. I'm doing it better now also than that too. Also, the amount of events versus phone work versus other things that I was doing. I spent a lot of time doing events because I knew I had to cross the state because I had to build out local affiliates, right? New York State has 62 counties. We only had 15 local affiliates when I started. Now we have 30. So almost half the state's covered in affiliates. And I helped build a lot of that, obviously. So I need to build more of the affiliates too. So there were many things that I did wrong that I learned to be better. But an individual, if you're running, here is some of the things you have to worry about. If you cannot build a team, don't run. If you don't want to raise money, don't run. Those are two incredible things you have to have. You'll be able to build a team and raise money. Well, Larry, why does it matter to build a team? I'm principled. Lots of people are principled. So what? Lots of people are principled. If you're going to run, you have to build a team. Why? Because you might actually win. One day you're going to win. And if you win, how are you going to have a chief of staff? How are you going to have an admin staff? You don't even know how to do that. You're going to be incompetent, not because you're not principled. You're going to be incompetent because you don't know how to run stuff. So you learn how to run stuff with loyal people in your campaign so that if you actually win, you get those same loyal people and run the actual office that you've won. You don't want to just hire Republicans, Democrats once you've won who aren't loyal, who don't care about you. That's a bad idea. Plus, your whole goal is influencing people. If you can't get people to give you money, why do you get them to vote for you or get your bill? How can you talk to people to get behind you to push an issue or an idea? So raising money is critical. You have to be able to raise money and build a team. You say, Larry, I can't do those things. Don't run. It's okay. Help somebody else run. You have other skill sets that you can help somebody else run who can do those things. So those things, I think you have to do it. But there's something else. You have to have very thick skin. Very thick skin from two sides. Side number one, to realize that if you run as a libertarian, not a Republican or Democrat, you are going to have to work twice as hard for half the results. And there is no recourse. You will be running an unfair race, and it doesn't matter. Suing is not going to help. Nothing's going to help. You are going to run an unfair race. That's how it works. If you can't handle that, don't run. Not just that. The press and the media and everyone else is going to treat you as a second-class citizen. They're going to judge you unfairly. They're going to beat you up for no reason. And worse, they're going to ignore you. Worse, no matter what you do, they're going to ignore you. You're going to have to fight your way to get all that stuff. If that bothers you, don't run. Last, you are going to be backstabbed by fellow libertarians. That constantly is going to happen. I'm not joking.
No, and I'm laughing because I know how true it is.
Yes. And if you can't pull that knife out of your back and go, I'm sorry, excuse me, Justin, this is your property, and you can't give it back to him, because the problem is we can't have the inner fighting because we need each other. There are people who backstab me more than once, and they're still on my team because I need them. And so you just have to do that. If you don't have very thick skin, don't run.
Michael Rohan does have a two-part comment that he left on Facebook. I'm going to read to you. I think he's just reiterating what I had said earlier. Larry, I'm really torn. We do need to fight on every front, not just on the most politically expedient. I appreciate you for fighting the good fight. However, I am afraid of not concentrating our efforts in the most effective way also. That's why I wanted to vote with my feet and participate in a state that will get me as close as possible to liberty in my lifetime. It's honorable to fight it out, but how do you make that choice? When do you do a tactical retreat and stop fighting an uphill battle? Not even just in politics, but is there a general rule more broadly? Business, combat, personal goals, friendships, etc. I spend a lot of time thinking about this.
Yeah, let me touch a couple of these things. Number one, if you want to focus libertarian, let's go libertarian first. Libertarian, you want to focus on the battle that does the most. And let me give you an example. The example I'll give you is Lord of the Rings. If you watch Lord of the Rings, tons of battle scenes, tons of fights, elves and dwarves and orcs and goblins, giants and elephants and all kind of fights all over the place. What actually matters? Ring in the volcano. That's all that matters. If you put the ring in the volcano, war's over. You don't, war's not over. All the battling is useless. So I would say fight the battles that matter. So I want to give you an example. I am totally biased, but I don't care. Just understand where I stand for where I sit. I'm totally biased. If everybody in the Libertarian Party said, you know what, we're going to get behind Larry Sharp and we're going to all give him $5 a month for the next year. And there are 10,000 Libertarians do that. And I'm going to be fine. That's 50 grand a month for the next year. What if 100,000 do it? That's $500,000 a month for the next year. I win the election if that happens. If I win the election, every other libertarian will have amazing results for the next 10 years. I think I'm the ring in the volcano. Clearly I'm biased, but that's what I think. So I would focus on a race like that. And that when I talk about that, focus on a race like that. Or even if you don't like me, Harrington's election. Same thing. If Harrington wins governorship, same thing happens, right? If Harrington wins or I win, same response. So we still get massive change either way. I'm biased. I want me. However, Harrington would be awesome. So whichever one you prefer, pick one of those two, right? That I think is really, when it comes to politics, critical. What's going to have the most impact that will affect everything else? On your personal level, once you realize that you're unhappy, and I'm serious when I say this, there are three parts to being happy. One, having purpose. Two, feeling loved. Three, feeling respected. If you have all three of those, if you have purpose, you feel loved, and you feel respected, you are happy. When you're making any move, home, business, work, whatever, politics, do you have at least two of those three? If you have two of those three, it's probably still a good fight. When you only have one or zero, time to not retreat, you withdraw. There's a difference. You withdraw. I'm a Marine. We don't retreat. We withdraw. There's a difference.
A tactical advance to the rear.
There we go. Yes. So you withdraw. So that's what you do. You fight until you don't have at least two of those three. If you feel like there's no purpose, why am I doing it? But you still feel like you're loved by the people around you. You feel respected. Keep fighting because people are with you. There's someone else who has purpose. You're supporting someone else's purpose. Stay there. But once you feel like people hate me here or I'm not respected at all and you have no purpose, withdraw. So I think those three, and that's with a relationship, that's with friendships, with a job, right? If you're with your spouse and right now you don't feel like you have purpose, but you're loved and respected by your spouse, keep working on a relationship. It's good. It's good. But if you only got one or none, might be time to withdraw from that too.
One other piece of advice that I like to give people, and I want your feedback on this one, Larry. Every time somebody tells me they're running for office as a libertarian, I ask them to define their victory. Mm-hmm. Because, like, what are you running for? It's like, yeah. I don't want to support anyone who's not running to win. Mm-hmm, but what do you consider a win?
Yep.
Is it absolutely getting elected? Is it achieving ballot access? Is it building a brand recognition? And I think there are different ways to achieve victory that aren't necessarily getting elected.
Yep.
I've run for office a couple times here in New Hampshire. I've gotten between 2-3% of the vote. And staggeringly, the number of votes I got last time would have been 4% two elections ago, but voter turnout's gotten absurd.
Happened to me too.
But it's to the point where my name recognition has gotten to the point where I randomly get recognized by media and press. I remember once when Tulsi Gabbard was on her exploratory visits to New Hampshire, I went to one of her events up in Concord, New Hampshire with AJ Olding, and a random reporter approached us to ask if I was Justin O'Donnell because he recognized me from running before. And it just wanted to talk to us about what we were doing there. And it's to the point now where I've had sitting state legislators approach me in the past couple months to ask for help drafting bills and to help writing bills that they wanted to submit this year because they thought my support would make them more likely to get public support from a certain demographic.
Sitting congressmen, call me now.
Yep.
Yes. I get it. Sitting congressman, call me now. Yes.
So if you
if someone is trying to run an independent campaign, they call me now too. Yes. I'm with you.
So if you had, other than getting elected, to pick a single other win condition for your race, what is it?
There's several. Last time I ran, I was very lucky. I was trying to run to win, obviously, as I always do run to win and hope that lightning strikes, of course. But what I wanted was ballot access, which I knew I would get it. So I had a secondary win. It's very easy for me last time. This time, I have several wins. One of them is to get so many votes that they can't close the loophole anymore. And that number, I believe, is 500,000. I think 500,000 votes is the number to where they simply can't. They, what would have to happen in New York State, and they might do it, but I feel there'd be so much pushback they wouldn't. They would have to basically write a law that says the only two parties allowed in New York State are Republicans and Democrats. And would they do it? Maybe. But there is too much pushback from some of the Greens, Working Families, Conservative Party. I don't think they'll do it. So my lowest goal, I would think, is 500,000 votes to make sure that Libertarian Party will exist in New York State in perpetuity. So I think that is my lowest one. I want to make sure Libertarian Party exists in New York State in perpetuity. The next thing would be getting on the national debate stage, meaning getting on a debate stage that's seen across the country. That would be another one. If I could actually, if I get enough lines to where the governor has to debate me, it will become a national debate. People will see it across the country. So debate stage is another goal I'm trying to achieve. If I get that one, imagine being in a debate stage and not just going, Democrat bad, Republican bad, not just doing that, but instead talking about actual issues and what matters. So I think that will be great too. So I think those two in my world, and there's another piece, coming in a close second, because coming in a close second, if it's close, I don't get blown out. I come in a close second, that changes everything. That means that I've raised enough money, I've increased the donor base, I've set up a team that works well, which more importantly, what most people don't get is it sets us up for 2024, because my team, if it's that good, that gets us to at least a close second, that's the team our presidential candidate can pick up and take and run with a hardcore team.
I'm excited. You had me sold the first time you called me and told me your pitch. You've doubled down and done it tonight. Larry, where can people learn more about your campaign and how can they help?
You can just Google Larry Sharp. That's awesome. I'm everywhere. I'm the only Larry Sharp people can see in like four pages. So please do that. Or head over to LarrySharp.com. And if you want to donate, now would be a good time, by the way, right before December 31st, because every dollar that comes in will be great because it will go into my January report. And since we only get reports every 3 months, people are going to be looking at that report for 3 months. If it's a low number, they're not going to like it. If it's a high number, look, Larry Sharp is cool. He raised a bunch of money. And also I can get into polls. I need polling like there's no tomorrow. Yep. Critical. Polling is so important. And of course, so is advertising, but polling's been more important.
All right. Thank you for that, everybody. Make sure you head out, check out LarrySharp.com for more information, how you can volunteer, how you can help, how you can donate before that critical deadline and give Larry the best chance to win.
And cryptocurrency, I take Bitcoin.
Yes, he does. He does take crypto. I think that's becoming more and more common of our candidates, and that's a niche market that we need to capture. So, which, a little bit of trivia. Do you know who the first political candidate to take Bitcoin donations was?
Oh, I don't know who.
Jared Polis.
Really?
Democrat.
Wow. Look at that.
Yeah, he was the first candidate. Had no clue how to spend them or convert them. And the FEC was forced to write rules around it because of him.
There we go. Well, he's kind of a rebel Democrat, so that's fine. Yeah.
Makes sense. But thank you for tuning in, everyone. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening after the fact. Make sure you head over to O'Donnell4Liberty.com. Hit that subscribe button. Download it from all your favorite audio podcatchers, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, and more. Or you can listen live on the radio from LRN.FM for the rest of the week. And until next time, be free. Thanks again for tuning in and joining us tonight. Make sure you hit that like button and leave a comment below to let us know your thoughts. If you haven't subscribed, go ahead and hit that big red subscribe button on YouTube and turn on notifications to get alerted every time we go live. If you enjoyed this content, you can join our production team on Patreon by following the link in the description. And don't forget to follow on social media and join our community Discord channel by following the links in the description as well. The best part of all of this is the community that we're building and growing. So go ahead and join us. And thanks once again to our awesome sponsors and patrons for making all of this possible. And if you can't catch the show live, you can always catch it the next day on YouTube, Odyssey, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, and wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts. So until next time, everybody, be free.